Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Up to Date, a property law podcast brought to you by the junior barristers at Tanfield Chambers. Tune in each week for our essential property updates so you're up to date. In each short episode, we'll summarise the most important developments in the property law world. We'll look at new laws and procedures coming into force, court and tribunal operations, and any changes on the horizon too. We'll also summarise and discuss a selection of new key judgments. Listen to this podcast for the key aspects of a changing landscape. Today is Tuesday the 30th of June. I'm Katie Gray and this week I'm joined by Richard Granby. Last week we looked at the keenly awaited case of Tracarrell House Limited in Rouncefield on the validity of Section 21 notices when no gas safety certificate was served at the start of the tenancy. This week we take a look at the High Street. Are commercial landlords feeling the pinch after the second quarter day in lockdown? Then we'll discuss some cases that have interested us this week. The first, a Court of Appeal decision on the FTT's powers to review its own decisions. And the second, a decision of the Upper Tribunal on the new approach to rent repayment orders. So Richard, welcome to your first Up to Date podcast.
Good morning, Katie.
Good morning. The property news that we need to talk about this week is really all about who's paid their rent and who's not paid. We've had the second quarter day in lockdown and the figures do make miserable reading. On an ordinary quarter day, £2.5 billion is collected from the UK High Street alone. But on the June quarter day this year, tenants are reported to have only paid 14% of their rent to landlords. That figure obviously includes shops that are shut because they're not legally able to open, but also chains that have seen falls in customer numbers because we're all working from home. And it also includes brands like Boots the Chemist, which has actually remained open throughout the crisis and one might have thought would have experienced strong demand for some of its supplies. So, Richard, is this a case of tenants who can't pay the rent or tenants holding on to their cash at the expense of private landlords?
Well, it's going to be a mix of both. I'm sure some tenants, but if these companies are continuing to trade as going concerns, presumably they have enough money in their bank account to meet their debts, or at least they expect to be able to meet their debts in the reasonable period, which leads one to suspect that companies who've been pressed by the financial crisis are taking advantage of the provisions in the Coronavirus Act to avoid forfeiture on the basis of rent arrears, simply to improve their own balance sheets in the interim. It's slightly risky as they're going to have to repay their landlords by the end of the grace period. And there's always a risk that landlords won't be amenable to that. That could be particularly be the case where tenants currently enjoy 54 Act protection. As we know, landlords are very keen to move tenants with 54 Act protection onto less secure forms of tenure. And this might be a good opportunity for commercial landlords to do that.
So what do you think is going to happen at the end of autumn when the furlough scheme ends? Do you think there's going to be an avalanche of evictions or more tenants moving on to less secure tenancies?
I don't think there's going to be a wave of evictions. The reason for that is simply that so many tenants haven't paid their rent and so many retail companies are in financial difficulty. So landlords don't really have the option of replacing a non-paying tenant with a paying tenant if very few tenants are paying their rent. As I said, the area where I would expect significant activity is where a tenant has a particularly advantageous lease or has statutory security. And it's those cases where landlords might look to use the current crisis to their advantage.
We saw last week that Into Properties, who had warned of a crisis in commercial rent payments before the start of lockdown, has now gone into administration. And it is fair to say that Into had its own problems before the crisis arose because of its own debt. But it's going to be interesting to see what the future holds for other large shopping centres across the country, because I know for one that I'm never going to go back to supermarket shopping now that I've managed to get to grips with online grocery shopping. I wonder if the same is going to be said of large retail developments, especially out of town ones.
Well, the first thing I want to know, Katie, is how you're managing to book slots. I've been going to out-of-town supermarkets for the first time in many years.
2 a.m. is the answer, Richard. 2 a.m.
I've heard about that and I don't like the sound of it. We're seeing here that this crisis has brought about the demise of some businesses that have had problems for a while. A lot of large retail centres are partly owned by local authorities who've got their own interests in keeping them going, and while they've got substantial financial pressures, do ultimately have very good credit and are able to provide a degree of quality to those outlets. Some of the large retail centres do have very deep-pocketed financial backers. In those cases, you might end up seeing the advantage of receivers. The advantage of an appointment of a receiver is that it insulates any lender from risk while the receiver seeks to trade their way out of trouble. The reason why we might not see too much of that is that the view of appointing a receiver is usually to sell, and lenders may not be able to recover all the money they've lent in a depressed market, which then really does beg the question, why are you looking to take control at all if you're expecting the market in the long run to come back round? So there's some difficult choices ahead for people who've been exposed as lenders in this market. But again, I wouldn't expect to see a wave of evictions simply because there aren't tenants who've got a good payment record in large numbers ready to go into these units. Katie, what do you think the future of large retail outlets is?
Well, last week we saw a planning application being made for the Westfield House of Fraser site to be turned into a large co-working space. And anyone that's been to the House of Fraser in Westfield will know that that is a huge footprint of prime commercial property. I wonder whether that might be the future, lots of larger retail units being used for co-working rather than for retail. Possibly more amenity space, things like bowling alleys and kind of family recreation things rather than shops and restaurants possibly, or even residential property. I wonder whether we might see a development of certainly some of the more city centre sites turning into residential flats. Next up, some interesting cases from the courts and tribunals. First is the Court of Appeal decision in Point West GR Limited and Bassey, which featured our very own Dan DeVar. Richard, what happened in that case?
Well, this is quite entertaining in a service charge dispute sort of way. As listeners will be aware, the tribunal, if an appeal is made, has a power where it thinks an appeal is likely to succeed to review its own decision. The point is that if a tribunal realises there's no reason to bother the upper tribunal or the Court of Appeal. In this case, in between the final, what should have been the final determination of the case, and the ultimate conclusion, there was a change in representation. And the leaseholder's new representatives spotted that the landlord, in presenting the accounts to the tribunal, had double counted. Amount that the tribunal said it was reasonable for the landlord to recover. They pointed out this error in the ground of appeal. The tribunal exercised, or purportedly exercised, its power to review its own decision, convened another 3-day trial, and resolve those issues largely in favour of the leaseholders. The upper tribunal upheld that decision as a proper use of the tribunal's power to review, and the Court of Appeal disagreed. The Court of Appeal said that it is important to have finality in litigation, and that the purpose of the review power is to address an error of law. An error of law could include an egregious error of fact, but it did not include meeting wholly new arguments, however good those wholly new arguments may be. And the parties, and crucially the tribunal, was stuck with the original decision on the grounds on which it had originally been argued. And the reason why this is interesting is those who practice in the tribunal know that the tribunal has a very broad approach to the powers it has in respect of its own decisions and the arguments it hears. And this is a very clear pushback from the Court of Appeal that finality in litigation is important and the tribunal can't use the review procedure to insulate itself from a successful appeal.
Yeah, and though the parties were stuck with the double counted sums that had been allowed at first instance, the Court of Appeal did point out that the landlord couldn't actually receive more than it had demanded if it had sued for those sums. So actually there was no detriment to anyone by the Court of Appeal allowing the very first decision of the FTT. Finally, we've recently seen an important decision from the Upper Tribunal in Vadamalayan and Stewart on rent repayment orders, which seems to have radically changed the law on the assessment of the quantum of such an order. The FTT's approach has always been to follow the 2012 decision of Parker and Waller, which held that there was no presumption that the sums repaid by the landlord should be all of the rent that was received, unless there were good reasons to order that, and the practice of the FTT has always been to focus on the profit element made by the landlord in letting the unlicensed HMO, so looking at the rent received and deducting the landlord's expenses from that and awarding the profit element back to the tenant. Judge Cook in Vadamalayan has really swept that approach aside and held that the new law introduced by the Housing and Planning Act 2016 meant that she was free of the decision in Parker and Waller, and that the new law requires the court to start from the point that all of the rent received is to be repaid, and that there should be no deductions for the landlord's expenses, say perhaps for utility bills, or even for other fines imposed by the magistrates courts or the local authorities in order to reflect the landlord's profit element. Quite surprisingly, Judge Cook found that there was no requirement in the new legislation for the quantum of the rent repayment order to be reasonable. This is a decision that, if it's not challenged, is going to hugely increase the value of rent repayment orders made in the future.
Do you think we're going to the Court of Appeal?
Well, I think you think we're going to the Court of Appeal.
I do think we're going to the Court of Appeal. The reasoning in this case is inconsistent, expressly inconsistent with reasoning in Parker and Waller. Judge Cook is very clear that she thinks Parker and Waller was wrongly decided. And although this is a decision on a later statute, the underlying logic is irreconcilable. It also raises perhaps an interesting question of, if an amount a landlord has to pay is not reasonable, what is it? You know, one consequence of this case is it'll, I think, put an increased focus on conduct under the statute, and the tribunal has been very unwilling to get sucked into the he said, she said of what was promised at the start of a tenancy, how quickly repairs were attended to, and so on, simply by focusing on the landlord's profit. And I imagine this decision will not be welcomed by first-year tribunal judges, because it is going to pull them into those issues. So for all those reasons, I think this will go higher, albeit possibly not on this case.
Thanks, Richard. That's all for this third episode. We hope you join us again next time. The cases we talked about today were Point West GR Limited and Bassey, a 2020 decision of the Court of Appeal, and Vadamalayan and Stewart and Others, a 2020 decision of the Upper Tribunal. I'll put full references in the episode description. You can subscribe to and download this podcast on Spotify, iTunes and Google Podcasts, as well as listening on the Tanfield Chambers website. Please also follow us on Twitter at UpToDatePodcast. We'd love to hear from you if there's anything you'd like us to cover in the next episode. And please share with your colleagues if you found this podcast useful. Tune in next time for a new episode, and we'll keep you up to date.